Good morning. Are you really out there? Good morning. It's great to see you today. Continuing our series for confirmands and for everybody else on what the what, covering some of the basics of our faith. Last week, talked a little bit about Exodus and how the stories of the Jews or the Hebrews being slave in Egypt and escaping from Pharaoh are good stories, but they don't have any basis in history or archaeological fact. And that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the stories are historical or not. The question is, what do the stories teach us about living with one another and being in relationship with God? See, we're human beings, and sometimes stories, though, are just not enough. We tell stories to help us figure out the way to live our lives. But sometimes we just want somebody to tell us what to do. Just do this. Don't do that. Because I'm busy. I got a life to live. So don't tell me another story. Let's just keep it simple and just tell me what to do and what not to do. Amen? Voila, you got yourself the Ten Commandments. All right? That's kind of sensibility out of which the Ten Commandments grew. The Israelites arrive at the mountain in chapter 19, and they stay there a very long time. And I think it's pretty clear it's because they're exhausted. They've just escaped from Pharaoh. It's all this big hoop-de-doo to get away from him. And now they get there and they're just like, oh, okay, what next? So in Exodus 19:8, right before our chapter today, Yahweh says, I got an offer for you. And the Israelites, you know, say basically, whatever you command, we're going to listen. We're going to obey. Whatever you want. Because whatever you've got to offer us is better than what the Pharaoh had to offer us. We don't really care what it is. I think they must have been Bob Dylan fans, remember? Right? You can serve the devil or you can serve the Lord, but what? No Bob Dylan fans here? You gotta serve somebody, right? You can serve the devil or you can serve the Lord, but you gotta serve somebody. That's exactly right. You don't get to choose not to have commandments. Because in order to live together, you have to agree on certain values. Whether they're spoken or unspoken, we all kind of agree on them. The Ten Commandments, then, are an alternative to the commandments of Pharaoh. And they're basically a charter for living in a different way in the world. There are actually a couple of them, that most of us do okay following. The rest are kind of rationalized away as impractical anymore. So as we hear this read to us today, see which ones that you can go with without a caveat. Let's hear these words from Exodus.
Good luck, Al.
Then God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in the heaven above, or that is on the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquity of parents to the third and of the fourth generations of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not make wrongful use of the names of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you, your sons or daughters, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Honor your father and your mother, so that your days may be long in the land and the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or male or female slave, or ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. When the people witnessed the thunder and lightning, the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking, they were afraid and trembled and stood at a distance and said to Moses, "You speak to us, and we will listen, but do not let God speak to us, or we will die." Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid, for God has come only to test you and to put you and to put the fear of him upon you so that you do not sin." Then the people stood at a distance while Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Let's pray. Loving and gracious Spirit, we're thankful for these words of wisdom that come from so long ago to be a part of our lives this day. May our hearts be open and may we hear them in a new way today, so that none of us might leave this place unchanged. We gather as followers of Jesus. Amen. Robert Cialdini is an emeritus professor of psychology and marketing at Arizona State University. And he, in the course of his work, has done a lot of studies about the way people respond to marketing and, you know, psychological experiments and things like that. And one of the things that they've discovered over the years is that people don't respond to things the way you think they might respond. It's interesting that basically telling people what they can't or shouldn't do actually increases the likelihood of that undesired behavior. Across the board, tell them what they can't do, and they end up doing it. Have any of you been parents before? Right? Keep your hands in your lap, right? Cialdini points out that here at the Petrified Forest, we have a problem. Their problem is that people are stealing the forest. They're stealing the wood from the forest floor at a rate of nearly a ton a month. A ton a month is going away from our petrified forest. And so, as you enter the park, if you go to the park now, you'll see a sign that says, "People are stealing wood from the forest floor, and they are undermining the integrity of the forest. So do not steal the petrified wood." That's a sign you see when you come in. One of Cialdini's graduate students went to the forest, saw that sign, and he said that before he could finish reading it, he heard his fiancée, who he counts among the single most honest people he's ever met in the world, say to him, "Oh, we better get ours now." I mean, what is it in us that could possibly do that? That could turn this honest young woman into an environmental criminal who is undermining a national treasure? So ASU did an experiment. They put that sign out in front of certain pathways that ran through the forest, hiking trails. And then they had a control path or two that didn't have any sign on it at all. And they salted all of those pathways with the same number of marked pieces of petrified wood. And they looked to see what effect that the sign had on the level of stealing of wood. The paths that had the sign had nearly triple the theft. Triple the theft. Now, human beings are funny. I mean, we live in this tension between not wanting to be told what to do and needing a source of direction for our lives in order for our lives to be livable. We go back and forth. And the Bible tells a story about our ancestors. First, the Hebrews, Israelites, Jews, and later the followers of Jesus. And the story is the same. We embrace God. We betray God. We follow the rules. We break the rules. And that's just who we are. That's part of being human. And somewhere in the middle of these two is real life, is regular life. So when we look at something like the Ten Commandments, I think what we see is a benchmark of at least where to start, where at least we can start the conversation. The rabbis teach that the first five sayings are all about people's relationship with God. You know, belief in God, prohibition of improper worship, don't swear an oath, Shabbat, and respect for parents. Incidentally, respect for parents is associated with one's allegiance to God because they are considered on the same level as God in Jewish tradition. The second five sayings are about relationships with other people, about murder and adultery and theft and false witness and coveting. Judaism teaches that these two sides, and they're often on, you know, they are the ones on the different sides of the tablets, and they go together that way. A Sunday school teacher was asking their kids about, you know, what they knew about the Ten Commandments, and they had gotten up to the honor thy father and thy mother part, and the teacher said, so, you know, looking at the kids, do you think there's any, you know, commandment that talks about the way that we should treat our brothers and sisters? And one of the little boys who was the oldest in his family just shot out right, thou shalt not kill. I mean, so right away, even at a young age, we start to adapt the Ten Commandments to who we are and our circumstances. And we start to make interpretations. And most of the Jewish sources that I've seen don't look at all the commandments as hard and fast rules. They indicate that while all the commandments are important, our duties to people trump our duties to God. So the rabbis teach that if you have to choose between performing a duty to God or performing a duty to a person, you should first perform the good deeds for another person and not worry about doing whatever it was you're thinking about for God. Now that shouldn't be surprising to us. I mean, that's the way Jesus lived. We have stories about Jesus doing that very thing. You might recall that he was criticized for healing on the Sabbath. And his religious opponent said, hey, you are doing work on the Sabbath. You are healing on the Sabbath. And his religious opponents used that as an opportunity to cast him as a rule breaker. Look at that. He doesn't care about the Ten Commandments. He's dangerous, right? When it comes to breaking the rules, I'm wondering how y'all did when Kyle read the Ten Commandments. How'd you do on the Ten Commandments sweepstakes there? When they were read, were you able to check all of them off with no asterisks? Right?
Well, yeah, but, that was then.
You know, right? I mean, you read those and you go, oh my gosh. It's a funny thing, but you know, one of the commandments that I think most people are most non-committal about or they care the least about anymore in the American culture is number four. You know what it is?
About the idols.
You shall keep the Sabbath holy. Okay? People say, you know, that's just a throwback, you know, to old times. You know, I remember, you know, when my grandmother was growing up, you know, the stores were closed. You know, we didn't do anything on Sunday. Man, I hated that. My grandmother made me sit and read the Bible all day. Blech! You know? We don't need to do that anymore. You know, when I lived in Australia, and Australia is arguably one of the least religious countries on the planet, and yet Sundays were a day of no work. Nobody worked. There was a lottery that the gas stations participated in so that in Perth, a town of 1 million people, only 2 gas stations were open on any one Sunday, and they rotated around the city every week. But no stores were open. Nothing happened on Sunday that involved commerce. Because it's such an unreligious country, people would go out and they do a lot of sports. There were a lot of Barbies, a lot of barbecues, a lot of family time together. But none of it was around commerce. You didn't buy anything or sell anything on Sundays. And that was a day that was set apart. Walter Brueggemann, the Old Testament professor, says that that really is a radical thing to consider in our culture that depends so much on keeping the economy going, that you would go a day, you would sacrifice a day when you wouldn't do anything that supported the secular workings of our society. And that's because, he says, it is in direct opposition to the Pharaoh's rules. Because what did the Pharaohs want the slaves doing? You want to work every day. More bricks. More bricks. He started to raise the number of bricks that you had to produce every day. Then he took away the straw and everything so that it would make it even harder so you have to work. Because the Pharaoh's idea of doing what you were supposed to do, that which gave you value, was production. Was making something that benefited someone else. No breaks. And so here we've got this crazy commandment in the Ten Commandments that says, no, I want you to, in fact, I want you to take a whole day off. And I don't want you to do anything that is productive by the way our society measures productivity. I want you to spend time with one another. I want you to spend time considering your relationships with one another and with God. That's what this day is dedicated to. And so the fourth commandment throws a whole big wrench into our whole market economy. Thomas Cahill, who wrote The Gifts of the Jews, says that the Sabbath is maybe the one totally unique contribution of the Jews to the world. Because in no other tradition is the daily grind of survival brought to a complete stop so that you can contemplate things that are beyond the basics of making do. So the commandments all have got these much deeper meanings to them than I think just the real simple ones that we see on monuments and things like that. And they're not just about these simple rules. They have profound social dimensions, and they're about a commitment to community and a concern for others as well as self. And they say that our private actions have social consequences. And we often, in the modern world, we can think that we can do whatever we want so long as it doesn't hurt someone else. But the reality is that whatever we do has social consequences. And it's not just actions, but it's inaction as well. I mean, think about the religious leaders of Jesus' day. They came to him and they said, hey, look at us, man. We got the commandments down. I haven't ever killed anybody. I don't steal, right? I've not done any of those things. And then Jesus pointed out, sure, you might not have ever murdered, but have you ever really loved unconditionally? Sure, you might have never stolen outright, but how much have you given? I mean, those religious leaders wanted to rationalize away just about everything in their lives. I didn't do anything wrong. Besides, she deserved it. The cashier gave me too much change. I mean, that's his mistake, not mine, right? It's not like I stole anything. The commandments are about personal integrity, about faithfulness in our relationships with one another and with God. And that's why Jesus, as Dee Dee pointed out, was able to really bring them down just to two commandments, to love God and love your neighbor. That's really it. That's what they're about. And the most any of us think about the Ten Commandments anymore is usually when a court fight breaks out over the Ten Commandments, the monuments being displayed in schools or courthouses or anything like that. But seldom is the origin of those displays ever discussed. You know, many of them are about 60 years old. And there's a reason. There's a reason. Back in the mid-1950s, there was a judge in Minnesota Juvenile Court. And as he was passing sentence on a particular teenager, he just kind of offhanded said, don't you even know that you've broken several of the Ten Commandments? And the kid just looked at him blankly and said, I don't know what you're talking about. What are the Ten Commandments? The judge was like, what? I mean, you don't even know the Ten Commandments? And so this judge decided that it would be a good idea to start putting together, he started out with framed prints of the Ten Commandments to be hung on the walls of various courthouses and things like that. Well, then there's a group called the Fraternal Order of Eagles that got wind of what he was doing, and they decided to help because, I don't know if you remember the 1950s, but we were in the middle of this thing called the Cold War, and we were up against the godless communists of the USSR, right? And so what could be better than to place these signs in all of our public places that said, you know, those godless communists are over there, but we obey God, right? This was at the exact same time that legislation passed our national government to adopt In God We Trust as our motto, and it got put on our money for the first time. Same time, right in this time period, because it was anti-communist. There were conflicts right off the bat, because the Minnesota judge, of course, guess what church he went to, being from Minnesota? Lutheran, you got it. Now, most people don't realize that the commandments differ both in numbering and in wording and language, in order, based on whether you're reading Luther's catechism, or if you're doing the Catholic version, or if you're doing the Jewish version. Which one are you going to do, right? And so they had to have a knockdown dragout to figure out what kind of mutant version they were going to create that would satisfy everybody and make it okay. About this same time, there was a young man who was making a movie. You might have seen this movie. It was called The Ten Commandments, 1956, Cecil B. DeMille. Not a dumb guy. He heard about this situation and saw it as a golden opportunity to promote the movie. And so he seized on this ingenious publicity scheme. In partnership with the Fraternal Order of Eagles, he sponsored the construction and distribution of literally thousands of Ten Commandment monuments all over the country. Some number it in the thousands, up to 4,000 of them. Granite monuments. Now, I'm really glad I found this picture because here is Yul Brynner actually participating in the dedication of one of the Milwaukee tablets. And Cecil B. DeMille, I think it's ironic that the Pharaoh is dedicating the Ten Commandments. But Charlton Heston also went all over the country dedicating these as well. And I showed this to Laura. I said, oh, I'm so glad I found a picture. And she said, yeah, because people think you make that stuff up anyway. So here's photographic evidence that that's what happened. And what's funny and bizarre is that all these years later, it's these DeMille-built and placed granite monuments that are the focus of a lot of these Ten Commandment court cases that you're hearing about in the news today because of the exclusion, the clause. And so, I mean, the one in Austin that was really big a few years ago, that's one of the DeMille ones. So The thing that's sad to me about all of this is that it seems that the flap over the Ten Commandments breaks the second commandment. I mean, the commandments themselves have been turned into an idol. And yet the second commandment says, no graven images, no idols that replace your worship of God. People make a huge fuss about how important they are. And yet they get caught not having a clue what's in them. A few years ago, Stephen Colbert interviewed a representative who was sponsoring a bill that required the display of the Ten Commandments on the grounds of some court or government building. And when he asked the politician, he couldn't name the Ten Commandments. The most he could come up with was three. Whoops. Now, to be fair, even Jesus only named a few in Matthew. Don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't bear false witness, honor your mother and your father, love your neighbor as yourself. Those are in Matthew when he's asked, what are the commandments? And what was funny is that the ones that Jesus quoted are all the ones about relationships with one another. There's no mention of God at all. They're all the commandments that any secular humanist would be able to buy into, no problem. Because they're about treating one another fairly and with honesty. Nothing about worshiping God or graven images or honoring the Sabbath or taking the Lord's name in vain or anything like that. So, let's give the politician a break, shall we? Not even Jesus could get all of them correctly. But you can, right? We'll just start in the back and go down the row and we'll just have each of you name them, right? Look, put to the test, Americans are able to recall the seven ingredients of the Big Mac before they can do the Ten Commandments. Who can do the Big Mac? Go ahead. Let's hear it. Okay, the Ten Commandments. exactly right. Well, we need to have you write a song for the Ten Commandments. But, I mean, people can name even the family members of the Brady Bunch more easily. I mean, this is through polling. They can do that. A survey by the Kelton Research Group found that more people knew the contents of the Big Mac than actually knew that a commandment existed that said, thou shalt not kill. Wow. A Barna poll, Barna is an evangelical Christian group that polls people about belief, and one of their polls indicated that at least 12% of adults in America believe that Joan of Arc was Noah's wife. A survey of graduating high school seniors revealed that over 50% of these graduating high school seniors thought that Sodom and Gomorrah were husband and wife. So we've got a problem. I'm not going to put anybody on the spot here, but I'm just guessing that most of us would have a hard time naming the Ten Commandments. And whatever you think of them, whatever you think of the effort to put them up in public places, they are a part of our heritage. And if you don't know them, then I think you've got zero credibility in talking about them at all. You don't get to be a part of the conversation. Period. So for our stream of thought today, I thought that I would springboard here on the eve of the Republican National Convention, thought I would springboard off of Ronald Reagan. How many of you remember his 11th commandment? Speak. Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment, which I think everybody would be able to put to good use, is Thou shalt not speak ill of any fellow Republican. Right? I think you could fill in the blank here for anybody at the end, right? So I have a new 11th commandment. And it's our stream of thought. Thou shalt not speak of the Ten Commandments unless you know the Ten Commandments. You shall not speak of them unless you know them, unless you've read them, unless you can talk about them and know their background and know their complexity. Because when you know the Ten Commandments, you'll start to see just how difficult it is to say that if we'd only follow them, all would be well with the world. They look simple, but they're not. They've got all kinds of culturally infused ideas that we don't put any stock in anymore. I mean, they assume, for instance, that slavery is okay. That's part of the Ten Commandments. So I think we need to know them. Not because knowing them will make us all righteous and respectable, but because being familiar with them helps us take one step away from biblical illiteracy, which is a big step towards being able to talk about things that really matter. Because that's what the Bible is all about. It is the stories of people. It is the recollections of people. It is the writings of people who spent their whole lives wrestling with how to live with one another, how to relate to the divine. And if we don't know what's in there, people can tell us anything. And we'll go, okay. Amen.